Well, folks, this has been a crazy show so far. Mark Stoops just joined us. And at the time when Mark Stoops joined us, the Mets were up 6-3. They were trailing the Braves 3-0. The Mets scored 6 runs in the 8th. And then Mark Stoops comes on. And when I'm talking to him about some of the decisions going back to the Georgia game, then also what happened in his great victory up against Ole Miss, I see the Mets just slowly melting down. And they were down 7-6 at the end of that conversation with Mark Stoops. As we go to the break, I told you Marte hits a base hit. Well, Francisco Lindor hit a 2-run shot. And now the Mets are still up, or they've taken the lead back. They're up 8-7 against the Braves. The Braves have found a way to get through the rest of the top of the 9th, and we'll see who the Mets will throw out there for the bottom of the 9th, as they need 3 more outs. The winner of this game goes to the postseason. The loser will then have to win game 2 of this doubleheader if they want to see the postseason. If whoever wins game 1 also wins game 2, then the Diamondbacks get into the postseason. So how about that? I thought during the Mark Stoops interview, I was about to just walk off the air. Not anything Coach said. It was just because the Mets were imploding, and then they had that big Lindor home run, the 2-run shot during the commercial break. Talk about emotions. How about that Alabama-Georgia game? Alabama took it to Georgia in the first half. Then Georgia shows the heart of a champion in the second half, and they took a lead briefly before you had the big connection from Milroe to Ryan Williams. And then Georgia was driving. I thought, oh, maybe they're going to go for 2 if they score. And then Carson Beck, unfortunately, if you're a Georgia fan, threw a pick. Let's go out to the guest line right now. Welcome in a man that covers college football. It is a sensational job and is also a former Georgia quarterback. And that is Aaron Murray. Aaron, I appreciate you hanging with us through the last 2 minutes as I explained all my crazy sports fandom and what's going on when I'm on the air and I have the Mets game on to the right of me.
Don't worry. I live in Atlanta, so we're right there with you on the opposite side with the Braves stressing everyone out here in Georgia. Unfortunately, it looked pretty good. Start the 8th, what, 3-0? And then just the Mets, man. Come on. So we'll see how they finish off. They can't win this one. Hopefully they win the second game later on this afternoon.
Right, there's still 3 outs. With this Mets bullpen, you guys could still win the game by the end of this conversation, and I may never bring you back on the air again. Nothing that you did wrong, of course. Let me start off with Bama, just the start of that game. Like, when I saw Alabama, and maybe I'm looking too much into it, but when I saw them coming out of the locker room, it looked like they had something to prove. We know Nick Saban no longer there as the head coach. Kalen DeBoer taking over. It's a new era of Alabama football. The motivation from that team, from the locker room to when the ball went up in the air and what they did in the first half, was really unbelievable.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And let's not forget, though, like, Alabama is the second most, quote-unquote, talented team in America behind Ohio State when it comes to this whole blue chip ratio thing. So, like, we act like just because Nick Saban's on the sideline that this team is not elite. And I think they knew that. I think that's part of the chip on the shoulders. Like, hey, you guys think we've won for a decade plus just because of Nick Saban? Like, yeah, that's a big factor. He's the greatest coach of all time. But we've won because we have elite talent on both sides of the football. We are, and we believe, the most talented team in all of college football. And they came out with the energy. Williams-Bryce now Saban Field there was popping. It was electric, and they took that energy from the fans and what Jalen was able to do with his legs and his arm early in the football game, and seemed like they're going to run away with it. If they look like that and play like that, and Jalen is as efficient as that, they're going to be tough to beat. And I love what Kalen DeBoer has done with him this season, and saying, hey, we went back and watched the tape last year. What got Alabama's offense into trouble was Jalen trying to be at times too much of a passer, sitting in the pocket, a ton of sacks. Well, this year, guess what? We're going to develop you as a passer, as we've seen through the first part of the season, but we're going to have more quarterback design runs for you, more opportunities for you to run the football. And I think it's been great for this offense. I think Jalen's done a good job of protecting himself, not taking too many direct shots, and obviously showing off his athleticism and why he's the most athletic player on the football field at times. So, they've been great offensively, man, no doubt about it. And unfortunately for Georgia, just one too many big explosive plays for the Tide on Saturday night.
Yeah, and I'll admit it. Hey, I'm extremely biased here. I've known Kalen DeBoer since he was at Fresno State. He used to always come on the show, so I've always been a big fan of his. But I know it's never easy to replace a Nick Saban. He's the standard. I never got some of the pushback and the disrespect this offseason directed towards Alabama, and it's like after 4 games, they're the number one team in the country. And I said all offseason, as much as I love Saban, DeBoer's going to make Milroe a better quarterback. And through 4 games right now, it's looking like, I know you have Travis Hunter and Ashton Jeanthe as well and Cam Ward, but it looks like Jalen Milroe is like the Heisman Trophy winner through four games.
Yeah, he was one of my – so I had two guys in the beginning of the season that I picked as kind of like my guys I thought were going to win the Heisman. He was one of them, and Dylan Gabriel was the other. Obviously, Dylan going from Oklahoma to Oregon, dual threat guy, like all that, that all plays. Dual threat guy, very accurate, played a lot of football. Oregon and what they do schematically fit well. So I thought – and he is going to have a big year. He'll be in the conversation. But you said it best, like Jalen year two, and regardless of the system, just as a quarterback, any position, but specifically the quarterback spot, going from year one to year two, gaining the confidence, knowing you're the guy, getting all the reps, and then you throw on top of that a significant upgrade when it comes to the schematics, the play calling, the development, and that's not Nick Saban's baby. Nick Saban's a defense guy. Nick Saban's a head coach. So Kalen was going to make him a better quarterback, and we've seen that through the first part of the season. The USF game was not his fault by any means. The offensive line, bunch of backups, they were pretty bad and just unable to get a rhythm offensively till, you know, pretty much to the fourth quarter. But what you've seen from him fundamental-wise, running-wise, some of the throws he makes intermediately, like in the football game, Georgia early on was bringing some inside pressure. So they were bringing like two linebackers, cross-dog blitzes, all that good stuff. He was seeing it, seeing the windows, seeing the 5 to 7 yard throws, and bam, ball's out now. No hesitation, no waiting, just ball's out. Perfect location, catch. The guy's able to turn that, you know, 5 yard catch into a 10 yard catch, 15 yard catch. Where last year it was big play or bust. It was a big play or a run. This year you're starting to see all of a sudden a guy that can throw the deep ball, obviously, a guy that's taken the 5 to 10 yard gain, and then a guy that can run the football as well. And you know, brings back to my original point of, if he continues to develop, and this is only game four for him in this system, if he continues to progress like this, he will win the Heisman, and Alabama will probably win a national championship.
You talk about development. It's kind of scary as well, Aaron Murray. How much more development can Ryan Williams do? Because at 17 years old, what I'm seeing right now, and I heard Saban 2 weeks ago compare him to Amari Cooper and say he's one of the more mature young adults that he's ever met. I don't even know what the ceiling can be for this guy, because what I've seen early on is just flat out like ridiculous.
It's the moment wasn't too big for him either. You know, for a guy to
he is the moment
team to yeah he is for someone to make the plays, you know, like the post route over Malachi Starks, who's a premier safety in all of college football, the jump up, the juggle, the catch, all that, and then when Georgia takes the lead, to say like, okay, we're going to put our best receiver to the outside, to the field, knowing that Georgia was going to bracket number two, leave him one-on-one, and then the catch, then the stutter, the stop, make two defenders run into each other, and then bam, the acceleration, the speed on top of that. It was one of the greatest plays you'll see any receiver really do. So yes, for someone that is 17 years old, that discussion is going to die pretty soon. He's not a kid. He's not a high schooler. He is officially moved into almost like grown man status. You do that against Georgia and a Kirby Smart defense and all those guys and stars on that side of the football, you have become one of the premier receivers in all of college football. And, you know, I said that connection, those two are only going to get better and better as the season goes on, which is going to be the scary thing.
Aaron Murray here with us. All right, let's get to the Georgia side. I thought in the first half it looked like Carson Beck was seeing ghosts, and then how much they were down in the second half. He really put on an impressive performance, but then with the game on the line, he throws the interception. What is Aaron Murray's evaluation of the Georgia quarterback and Carson Beck?
It's been a rough 2 weeks, man. Go back to the Kentucky game, was not great. This game, the first half, it was a mixture of everyone. I thought the offensive line actually played well for Georgia, going back and watching tape. I thought they pass protected well. I thought when Georgia was committed to running the football, I thought they did a pretty good job. So like the big boys up front did their job. This was a game where the receivers and quarterback did not do their job, at least for the first, you know, two quarters of the football game. Drop passes. I mean, second play of the game was a 50-yard bomb that should have been a completion. All of a sudden, this game could have, yeah, that completely swung, but would have slowed down some of that momentum that Alabama was able to create on their first possession. That was dropped. Then the cover zero perfect check to a tunnel screen that could have been a big play. Receiver goes and blocks instead of runs, and it turns into an interception. So, like, not all on Carson. But there was probably, I don't know, 5 to 10 throws that were on him. You know, a couple of his interceptions, not holding the football, fumbling it. Little things that a guy that is going to be projected to be a number one to number three quarterback taking an NFL draft, who has played a lot of football, should not be making. Especially against a secondary in Alabama that was their weakness. That was vulnerable. And you saw them exploit that there in the second half. So it's been it's been a theme for Georgia this season. Start off slow, second half, they make the comeback. You saw it versus Clemson. They didn't make the comeback, but it was like, 6-0, 6-3, whatever it was. They end up pulling away, having a great second half. Kentucky, not very good in the first half, end up doing their thing, winning in the second half. Alabama, horrendous first half, turn it on and have an opportunity to win the second half. But you can't rely on that every single week, and it bits you in the butt this game versus Alabama because you walk out of there with an L. So they have to be better. Carson has to be better, no doubt about it. And then, the interception, I'm not going to blame him at the end. Colby Young has to make a play on that football. As a receiver, if you can't catch it, you need to turn it into a defender. I'm not blaming Carson on that. I'm blaming Carson two plays before that. Similar play, one-on-one with Colby. He predetermines he's going to throw a back shoulder. Colby Young steps on the defender's toes, beats him down the field for an easy touchdown, and Carson underthrows it. It's an incompletion when it should have been a touchdown. It's like, that was on Carson. IT needs to be on Colby trying to make a play to protect his quarterback.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with some of the sloppy play that we've seen from Georgia, right? Georgia has reached the point, and I know they didn't win the national championship last year, but it's always, all right, Georgia or the field is the question. But from 1 to 10, 1 no concern, 10 all the concern in the world, this team winning a national championship this year, where's your concern level at on a number perspective?
It's very high because there's areas that are massive concerns that are going to hold them back. And I think the secondary is one, because you look at the teams they face the rest of the way. Like this, and I said this before the game, like loser this game, the excuse is going to be, oh, it's okay because it's a 12-team playoff. Oh, it's fine because it's Alabama and Georgia and they're so talented, it doesn't really matter. Like, no, like both teams' schedules the rest of the way out, it's not easy. Alabama's a little bit easier, yet they have to go to Knoxville. They got to play Missouri at home. I'm drawing blank who else they have, but then Georgia has to go to Austin, a throwing football team. They have to go to Ole Miss, a throwing football team, and then they got to go to Tennessee, a throwing football team with a mobile quarterback. So there is no, oh, Georgia's going to get a rematch at Alabama if you can't figure out the defensive backfield and be able to stop the pass. And then flip it to the other side, you have to find ways to create more explosive plays consistently in the pass game, not just for one half. So I think there's a lot of things that Georgia needs to fix. Starting off fast, getting the DBs right, and you only got a couple weeks before you got to play Texas. So it ain't like you got a bunch of games to try and figure that out.
If last thing I'll ask you, Aaron Murray, if you were the leader, if you were the quarterback of this Georgia team after a loss like that, where it was ugly, got back in it, and then you lost the game. There's no more victories here for this Georgia program when you are the standard. What's your message this week? Like, forget about the Auburn game. Just what is your message about what this team needs to do?
Well, I think the message is, guys, we are our own worst enemy. And plain and simple, we are our own. It was happening versus Kentucky. It happened against Alabama. If we just play the football game that we are capable of playing, a la third and fourth quarter versus Bama, we can play anyone in the country and we can win. I mean, going into that stadium and having an opportunity to win, being down 28 points, and to come back against Bama in their home stadium is unheard of. So there is no doubt that you can't do that every single week, every single quarter. It's now just doing it. You haven't done it yet. It's the fourth game of the season. It's a veteran football team, yet I have not seen Georgia play four quarters of football. They have not done it. So, like, that is the message. Guys, how do we play four quarters of football? Because if we play four quarters of football to where we know we're capable of, we have a chance to win a national championship this year.
You catch him on ESPN, also SiriusXM. He is Aaron Murray. Aaron, always appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this.
Appreciate that one. Go Braves!
Well, the Mets just won, all right? So you better win the second game or you're
out of
here.
Game two. Come
so
on,
you can come back on anytime you want, Aaron Murray.
There we go.
Thanks so much. There he is, Aaron Murray joining us. And let me just say it. Victory! That's right! Oh, geez. I'm just happy this is over. Because let me tell you, during the Stoops interview when the Mets are melting down, and then when Diaz had a little trouble in the ninth, like, my eyes were wandering to the TV to my right, and I'm like, please, 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 let me just see elation here. Let me just see some celebration here. And that's what ended up happening. So the Mets are in. We'll see what the approach is for game two. Lindor is the story. I know why his back was hurting before this game and he was out for a while because he was carrying the team. His back may be hurting after this because he still is carrying the team. Unbelievable what he did in that ninth inning. So the Mets are in the postseason. Now we turn our attention to game two between the Mets and the Braves. If the Mets win, they go to San Diego and the Diamondbacks are in the postseason and they go to Milwaukee. However, if the Mets just kind of punt on the game, hey, we're in, and the Braves end up winning, then the Braves are in the postseason, they go to San Diego, and then the Mets go to Milwaukee. But the Mets, they win the game. Oh, my God. Seriously. This is something. Whew. I need, like, a break. So we'll take one right now, and we'll come on back. It is the Zach Gelb Show. Mike McDaniel in the YouTube chat. I don't think that's the coach of the Dolphins. I'm just going to go out on a limb. I'm reading the comments now. He was like, Zach is eyeballing the Mets during this interview. You bet your ass I was. You know, when we didn't stream the show, you'd have no clue what's going on. You just hear what's going on. So you don't know what I'm doing, how I look, anything that's going on. That would have been easier to navigate. But I was cognizant of the fact there's a camera in front of my face. And I was definitely looking off to the right as I was watching the New York Mets and trying to intently listen to Aaron Murray. But I will say, Stu, Mark Stoops and I will always have a bond. Because he is defending his case passionately about the Georgia situation and then what happened up against Ole Miss. I was dead inside as the Mets choked up that game. But that's this New York Mets team. They have been counted out. I think I counted them out six games into the season. And there has been like 30 moments where you're like, this team's dead. That's the final straw that breaks the camel's back. And they always find a way. And this is the perfect way to clinch a postseason berth. The perfect way. You down and out, down 3-0. You make us believe you go up 6-3. Diaz in the bullpen implodes. And then Francisco Lindor, who is just a New York Met god now, finds a way to hit a two-run jack and then a little traffic in the ninth. But Diaz, you put him back out and they get the job done. You know, wow. That was crazy. I got to catch my breath. I really do. Ty in Boise says, Mets win, Mets win. Cover the studio in plastic and break out the champagne. You know what? They did have a watch party today in the Performance Center. And there were some really good tacos that they had. If we got champagne, yeah, I'll drink on the air. I don't know how it'll end up sounding when we bring on Kalen DeBoer at 5 p.m. Eastern time and Big Poppy at 5:25 p.m. Eastern time. But geez Louise, that was something. That was something. So the Mets are in the postseason. They defeat the Braves 8-7. And now the strategy here for the doubleheader, I think, is fascinating. And we'll get to the football in just a second, but the strategy here, do you go for it and knock out the Braves? The Mets have struggled against the Brewers big time this year, only winning one game. And do you go out to San Diego, another team that, you know, a few years ago knocked them out of the postseason? Or do you just say, hey, we won, let the Braves have this game, we'll pitch, you know, the bottom of the barrel guys, you know, whoever, and we'll get back on a flight to Milwaukee? I was talking to Hickey during the break in the newsroom, and Hickey goes, win this game, put the Braves out of their misery. Like, I heard Hickey's reactions through these soundproof doors. I walked out when Nimmo hit the home run. He picked up a chair. I saw it and threw it across the room in elation.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, I swear. He just said to me during the break, he goes, I need to apologize to people. That's the most unprofessional I've ever acted here. So wow. That was in a positive moment when the Mets blew the game.
Oh,
what was the reaction? I feel like when the Mets do something positive, Hickey is like over the top elated, but then when it goes against him, he just sits there in silence and just like slams his head into the computer. But Hickey thinks they should go after the Braves here. I actually think you got the win. That was so emotional. Just be good, even if it ends up meaning you go up against a place where you've been terrible in this year or against a team in the Brewers and you go from there. Because you got to play tomorrow. Like, if you had 2 days off or something, okay, yeah, go stick it to the Braves. And by the way, where's Barrett Salee, the college football writer? He texted me this morning, actually. Good luck. He goes, you know, I hate your baseball team. And I sent him back, have you ever seen the meme of the Bloods and the Crips coming together holding the blue and the red bandanas? And I go, this is me and you today, buddy. I'm not greedy. I just wanted one win. And I don't care who they play. I don't care where they play. I don't care when they play. I just wanted this team to go to the postseason because this team deserved it. And this is the third most fun baseball team right now that I've seen in my lifetime. Alrighty, back to the football. Onside, offside. Stu, hit it!
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside! Defense number 69!
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb.
I don't know if this is a very professional Twitter name, so I'm going to just say it anyway. Dilbert Magoo, I don't even know what the heck that means, says, LOL when the Mets were imploding. Can't wait for Zach Gelb to walk out on his own show. Hashtag Braves Country.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Dilbert.
You lost.
I thought of a lot of other things I was going to say there, but then I couldn't say them on the radio. So, Stu, save me here. Let's get a little onside, offside on this joyous, and I mean joyous, Monday. Oh, this is awesome.
All right, so the Browns continue to do what the Browns do as Cleveland gave up on Baker Mayfield in order to trade for Deshaun Watson, then threw Joe Flacco to the curb after he led them to the playoffs last season. Now Baker is 3-1 and gunning for a second straight division title in Tampa Bay. Flacco led the Colts to an upset win after Anthony Richardson got hurt yesterday. And of course, Watson and the Browns are now 1-3. Onsides, offsides, the Watson deal will go down as the worst move in NFL history.
Oh, boy. That's a phenomenal. And I mean a phenomenal question. So here's the thing. Here's why I'm going to say onsides. Because I don't believe in Deshaun Watson. And after this year, he's got 2 years left on the contract. I used to believe in Deshaun Watson. Now, as a person, there's no reason to believe in him. As a football player, I used to believe in him so much. And then ever since we saw him last play in the 2020 season, when they were got off as a team, but he was incredible, we haven't seen that version of Deshaun Watson in a long, and I mean a long time. So, sometimes, like Stu, you know this, you make a deal and it's just a terrible contract. But when you trade all those assets and then also give a guaranteed contract, and then it's weird to say the icing on the cake here, but the guy that you gave up on, Baker Mayfield, made the playoffs last year and won a playoff game. Joe Flacco, who replaced, you know, 3 or 4 times down the road last year after 3 or 4 other guys, Deshaun Watson, who was hurt, he makes the postseason. And now the Browns are this bad. And you know this, Stu, when you're bad. There's certain ways you lose. Your football team yesterday didn't have Davante Adams or Max Crosby. And the Browns throw that touchdown pass to Amari Cooper. And honestly, Stu, did you think that was holding?
At first, I did not. On the replay, I think it was a ticky-tack call, I'll say that.
I didn't think it should have got called. And Ross Tucker was doing the game, right?
Yes, but
he lost his mind.
He did, and then they watched the replay, and he said,
walked
okay, I'm fine with it, yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that Watson deal is going to go down as the worst move in the history of the NFL because it's a double whammy. Terrible contract, terrible trade, and oh yeah, by the way, look how quickly the Texans have turned it around. You know, the Texans that have C.J. Stroud, and look what he's doing. So the Texans who got rid of Watson are thriving. Flacco's still in this league, which you didn't bring him back this year because you didn't want Deshaun Watson's feelings getting hurt. And Baker Mayfield just made the playoffs this past year. So yeah, I can't say anything positive to Browns fans here. So onside, the Watson deal will go down as the worst move in the history of the NFL.
All right, the Jags come from ahead to lose to the Texans, falling to 0-4 on the season, and are now just 1-9 over the last 10 games dating back to last year. After the game, head coach Doug Peterson gave an odd answer in question to his job security.
Start worrying about your status.
My status?
Yeah, after an 0-4 start.
I mean, no. I mean, it's kind of a strange question, but okay.
So onsides, offsides, Peterson will be the first coach fired this year.
He's cooked. And and I love Doug Peterson, but he is so cooked. That's a veteran coach. Stu, how is that an odd question? Like, you're getting asked about your job status. It stinks that someone has to ask that, but that's the reporter's job. And yes, can Robert Saleh get fired? Sure, in season. I think that's a possibility. I don't think McCarthy's getting fired in season. Sirianni's also another possibility. But you don't have a win in Jacksonville. And that team has been close to getting two wins. They fumbled away the ball that sparked that Dolphins comeback. And then what was that fourth down play call? Running the ball yesterday with Trevor Lawrence? So they've been so close to putting the ball in the end zone, but they haven't got the job done. And the owner expects this team to be good. I think Peterson, and I hate to say it because I think the guy's a good coach, but I think he's fired within a few weeks. And I do think he'll be the first coach fired on sides.
All right. Well, Samter's Chiefs are now 4-0, sneaking by the shorthanded Chargers yesterday. Travis Kelce broke out of his slump, catching 7 passes for 89 yards, while rookie Xavier Worthy caught 3 passes for 73 yards and a touchdown. KC will need to step up, though, after a number one wideout, Rashid Rice, appeared to tear his ACL after being tackled by Patrick Mahomes on an interception return. Onsides, offsides, the Chiefs can still win the Super Bowl this season without Rice.
Yes, onsides, because you have Patrick Mahomes. And I know the Chiefs haven't even played all that great this year. They haven't even played a great game yet. And last time I checked, they don't have one loss. They are undefeated. So we saw this last year where the Chiefs are vulnerable. Who's going to take out Kansas City? And no one got the job done. So yes, the Kansas City Chiefs can find a way to get the job done and win a Super Bowl this year without Rashee Rice. And we'll see what they do from now until the deadline. Now, let me send a message to the other 31 teams. Do not trade a wide receiver to the Kansas City Chiefs. Because then you're going to be the GM, whether it's Amari Cooper going from Cleveland to Kansas City, like whoever it may be. You're going to be the GM with egg on your face because it's not going to work out for you. And I've seen this story with my football team. It will work out for them. We got to prevent the Chiefs from winning a Super Bowl this year. But yeah, they could still win a Super Bowl without Rice on sides.
The Baltimore Ravens approved a 2-2 with a 35-10 stomping of the previously unbeaten Bills and now sit just one game behind division-leading Pittsburgh. Derrick Henry led off the game with an insane 87-yard touchdown run on his way to 199 rushing yards on the day, just a week after 151 yards against the Cowboys. Onsides, offsides, the Ravens will win the AFC North.
Onsides. I'll get more into this later. I'm out on the Bengals. Even in a win yesterday, and I know what the Bengals did up against Kansas City where they just lost that game, I didn't even like the way that they looked at times up against the Carolina Panthers. Like, I don't walk away saying, whoof, you know, and I have to give the benefit of the doubt once again to the Bengals. The Steelers, their offense is still problematic. I know they were undefeated to start the season before losing the other day, and the Browns just stink. So, yeah, I do think the Ravens are going to run to the AFC North title, and they're going to win it. And also, let me just defend Buffalo for a second. I said last week that Buffalo threw the first 3 weeks of the season the best team in the NFL. I still think Buffalo has a great chance to beat Kansas City in the postseason. I expected, even with calling the Bills the best team in the league after 3 weeks, I expected the Ravens to win yesterday. I thought Baltimore was going to win at home. I didn't think they were going to blow them out. But one thing that annoyed me with Buffalo in that game, when they were trailing, even when they were down to 11, they got cute with that trick play. Like, you don't need to try to get it all back in one play. You physically can't. And they were trying to do so. Like, you could still run the ball in that spot. And they didn't do so. And James Cook is so important to that team, and you basically took him out of the game plan. But yeah, I do think the Ravens will end up winting the AFC North on sides.
This might finally be the year for James Franklin in Penn State, as Hot Take Hickey's Nittany Lions improved to 4-0 after an impressive 21-7 win over 19 Illinois. Drew Aller threw for just 135 yards, but they didn't need him as they gained 239 yards on the ground and held the Illini to just 219 total yards. Onsides, offsides, Penn State can beat Ohio State when they match up in a few weeks.
A few weeks ago, I would have said yes. I would have said onsides. I know you called that an impressive win up against Illinois. I wasn't impressed by it. I wasn't. That game was close for a while. I did not love Penn State in that game. And Illinois was coming off a big win, too, up against Nebraska the week before that. I know they're home for that game in Happy Valley. And I don't trust James Franklin. And I really don't trust Ryan Day.
This is like, what disease would you rather have? It's better to have Ryan Day than James Franklin, if I'm being honest. Until Penn State wins a big game when it matters, as much as this pains me to say this, I'll take Ohio State. So Penn State can beat Ohio State when they match up in a few weeks. I will go offside.
Offside!
Lane Kiffin and number 6 Ole Miss lost a heartbreaker to Kentucky, falling 20-17 after missing a potential tying field goal in the final minute. The Rebels dropped to 12th in the latest rankings, right on the cusp of the playoffs. Onsides, offsides, Ole Miss will still make the college football playoffs.
Oh, it's a great question. So they lose one game, and that's what's crazy, man. I think people still need to adjust. It's a 12-team format. Like, after one loss, I saw people say, and I know they lost to Kentucky, oh, they're now done. You just can't have more than two losses. And you know what I'll compare that loss to for Ole Miss to? It's kind of like Notre Dame USC from last year. When we looked at USC, I was like, oh, USC will lose a game because of their defense, not because of their offense. And then they lose a game because of their offense when Caleb Williams didn't play well in that first half up against Notre Dame. That was the same kind of feeling with Ole Miss. And you never thought they would lose a game this year because of their offense. They would lose it because of their defense. And then they lost that game because their offense wasn't good enough up against Kentucky. So if you get to two losses, you can still make it three. It's going to be really tough. They still play South Carolina, LSU, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi State. I think they lose to Georgia, and I'll say they'll lose one more. I think they'll be a three-loss team. So Ole Miss will still make the college football playoffs. I will go slightly offside.
Offside.
All right, and last one. It seems like nobody in the Big 12 wants to win the conference, as yet another top team fell this weekend as number 10 Utah lost to Arizona. There are currently three teams tied atop the conference at 2-0. BYU, Texas Tech, and yes, Coach Prime's Colorado after the Buffaloes beat up on UCF 48-21. Onsides, offsides, Colorado can actually make the Big 12 title game.
Anything could happen in the Big 12. I'm not expecting them to do so, but can they? Yeah, they can. Now, they have a big one coming up next against Kansas State. And that will tell me a lot of what Klieman has been able to do there. But, man, it seems like whenever you fall in love, and that game's in 2 weeks, it seems like whenever you fall in love with a team in the Big 12, they lose. Like, everyone loved Utah, and then Utah ended up losing to Arizona. So that's just the way that this thing goes down. So the Big 12 is a complete question mark. You know, I'll go offside on that because I still think they will have some games where when you look at this team, you'll just say, man, they have some really great players. Like, Shador is going to be a top 10 pick. Travis Hunter could be the number one pick of the draft. But the rest of their roster, great win against UCF, but I think we'll come back to bite them as the season does go on. They're scheduled the rest of the way. Kansas State, Arizona, Cincinnati, Texas Tech, Utah, Kansas, and Oklahoma State. I think they'll just miss out on making the Big 12 championship game, so I will go offside on that one. Alrighty, it is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I'm really impressed with the Minnesota Vikings and the Washington Commanders. We will get to both those teams on the other side. Also, still to come, at the top of the hour from 20 minutes from now, we will be joined by the head football coach at Alabama, Kalen DeBoer. Big Poppy David Ortiz is going to stop by at 5:20 p.m. Eastern time, 2:20 p.m. Pacific. We don't have that much time. We got a whole lot more to do. An hour 20 left in this extravaganza, and I could probably do an eight-hour show. You know, let's just call this Ion Football, and, you know, JR, you could have the night off, and I'll do 4 more hours after that. I'm just kidding, you know. JR, listening right now. I need to be compensated for that. But here he is, El Capitan, Marco Belletti. Holy smokes, what a crazy show this has been. It's kind of funny. Samter, Stu, and I every day, we create a rundown. And sometimes, you know, right, things happen and you don't get to them. So I'm looking at the rundown here. We did the Jets are mid to open up the show. I gave you my 5 quick college football takeaways. That went according to plan. 3:40, we were supposed to do a news brief. That's not happening. 4 o'clock, we had Aaron Murray. That was fun. 4:20, we had onside offsides. We're about to get to the Vikings and the Commanders. We're going to have to blow off no huddle offense because we got Kalen DeBoer coming up in about 12 minutes from now, the head football coach at Alabama. Big Poppy David Ortiz is going to join us at 5:20 p.m. Eastern time. And then at 5:40 p.m. Eastern time, we'll regroup and figure out what we want to do. What a game that was with the Mets beating the Braves. That was something. And you know what? Sometimes you'll get like some dopes that will write some articles that will go, and Stu's looking at me like, oh, where is this going right now? You'll get some people that will criticize national radio and be like, oh, all they do is New York talk. Oh, that's all they do is New York talk. We really don't do much New York talk. I know we led the show today talking about the Jets, and I've talked about the Mets. But we, as a show, know what affiliates we're on, and it's important to serve those affiliates. Even though you could catch us anywhere around the country on the Free Odyssey app and SiriusXM channel 158. But a game like what we just saw, and you get my reaction on the air while I'm interviewing Mark Stoops, while I'm interviewing Aaron Murray, and then reacting to it as things are just going on down in between the show, any sport fan can relate to this. Whether it's the elation of a huge win or the absolute heartbreak of a loss, and now you go into another game if you're the Braves, who, by the way, they just had to scratch Chris Sale. He was supposed to pitch the second game. He's now out of the second game. So they'll start this up in a bit, Mets and Braves, and what's on the line is for the Braves, they win there in the postseason. And they go to San Diego, and the Mets go to Milwaukee. The Braves lose this game. They're out. Arizona's in. Mets go to San Diego. Diamondbacks go to Milwaukee. But I just had a buddy text me, and he is not a Met fan. And he goes, sometimes I consider not investing my entire life into sports. And then moments like that Mets game happen, and I know why I do it. What a great line, and he's 100% true. So it doesn't matter if you're a Met fan or not, Brave fan or not. Everyone could relate to this in a huge game, and you just never know how it's going to play out. All righty. Let me get to two teams I'm really impressed by. It's the Washington Commanders and the Minnesota Vikings. Let me start with the Commanders. I think it is impossible today, if you are a Commanders fan, to not wake up and say, through four games we have our guy, and now start to think, hey, are we this year's version of the 2023 Houston Texans? The Commanders, just like the Texans, for a long time have been one big fat joke. But when you get a quarterback that has an elite quarterback look and feel to him, and a franchise quarterback look and feel to him, it could change your franchise in a second. You know, I say this from time to time, going from the outhouse to the penthouse. That could happen. Now, it's only four games in, so no bronze busts are reserved yet in Canton, Ohio. No Hall of Fame gold jackets are given out. And I don't even know if the Commanders will finish above 500. But you look at the landscape of the NFC East right now. The Cowboys are mid. The Giants stink. And the Eagles have a chemistry problem and a coaching problem. So I look at the Commanders, and I say to Commanders fans today, why not you? That's what I say. And I think it is very possible that this team can make the playoffs. I think it's very possible that this team can win the division. Now, I'm not saying that will definitely happen. If you still put a gun to my head, I'm going to say the Eagles win the division. But you look at the Commanders' schedule the rest of the way, and you can't really predict any game in the NFL, right? We all say, oh, we know what's going to happen, and it's very tough to do. The only thing I know what was going to happen is when I went 3-0 in week 3, I said it on the air for picks, I was going to go 0-3 in week 4, and I went 0-3 in week 4. Like, someone was getting on me last night, my buddy Largent Parks, in the YouTube chat when I was checking out Hickey last night on his show on the Infinity Sports Network with YouTube. And he's like, oh, I fade you. I fade you. You're an idiot. You're a moron. You're dope. I'm like, all right, fine. Whatever. Like, yeah, I went 3-0 in week 3, and I said I went 0-3. So technically, Stu, can I count that as a winning week since I guaranteed those are going to be three losing picks? I think I should just put that as 3-0 in the standings, if I'm being honest.
Does sound like it, because you did say you were going to, yeah.
It was a guarantee. Whenever you go 3-0, you go 0-3 the next week. But you look at the Commanders' schedule, Browns, Ravens, Panthers, Bears, Giants, Steelers, Eagles, Cowboys, Titans, Saints, Eagles, Falcons, Dallas. You know, the only game that you look at and you say, we probably can't win. And you know what? It's a shame that's a 1 p.m. Eastern time game. I kind of wish it was Sunday at 8:20 or a primetime game. Just Jaden Daniels going up against Lamar would be a lot of fun. But that's the only game in Baltimore where you're like, they probably can't win. You know, those divisional games are always 50-50 games. And the rest of the schedule is not tough. And they're out to a 3-1 start. And hey, I get it. They barely beat the Giants. They had a heck of a performance up against the Bengals. They won one for Cliff Kingsbury and smashed the Arizona Cardinals. But it's not crazy to say this team goes 9-8 and this team ends up making the playoffs. It's not crazy. And if you want to tell me they can win the division, you got a lot of vulnerability right now. And Darius Robinson, remember the former Missouri defensive lineman, he joined us right before the draft, and he said that he believes that Jaden Daniels is the best player in this draft. And I don't know what Drake May is going to turn out to be, but if you recall leading up to this draft, I was saying down the stretch of the regular season, I wanted the Patriots to lose because I wanted the second overall pick because I wanted Jaden Daniels. But I've been very impressed with the Commanders. Now for the Vikings. I thought Sam Darnold's career was going to be defined off of getting mono and seeing ghosts. I really did. Now, I don't know how this turns out long term. I don't know for sure. I can't say with certainty that J.J. McCarthy is a first-round pick is going to be the starting quarterback next year for the Vikings. I can't. And yeah, Sam Darnold still will have some turnovers. But Sam Darnold, to start this season, is completing nearly 69% of his passes, has 11 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. And he's thrown for 932 yards. And you blow out the Giants, you beat the 49ers, you blow out the Texans. And I know the final score says only a 2-point victory up against the Packers, but they took it to the Packers at Lambeau Field in that first half. This Minnesota team, you want to say they could win the division? Oh, yeah. That's possible. Because the Bears, I know they got to win yesterday, but they're not going to win the division. I don't think their line holds up. The Packers are 2-2. They're still going to be a good team. The Lions will see what they do after tonight. But this Minnesota team at 4-0, Flores is a phenomenal defensive coordinator. And on offense, Minnesota's got a ton of talent. Where Sam Darnold's being put in a position to succeed with great coaching. Kevin O'Connell right now through the first 4 weeks, I would say he's coach of the year. And you have Justin Jefferson. You'll get Addison, right? Hockenson eventually. And you look at Aaron Jones running the football. That's a team. They should make the playoffs. We'll see if they can win the NFC North. Kalen DeBoer joins us next to talk Alabama beating Georgia.